Hello, everybody, and welcome to the seventh installment of the Leisure Wheels podcast. I've got Gert with me, and he's going to do most of the talking. He's been away since last week, Tuesday, I think. So, Gert, tell us, where have you been, man?
Well, first up was Mozambique, where we did the launch of the BMW X5.
Yes.
I got to drive most of the new models, and then also been to Lesotho with the Ford Kuga, going all the way to Semonkong Lodge and the Malansiyane Falls.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's been an interesting week.
Okay, so obviously the big news is the BMW X5.
That's it.
Third generation, isn't it?
Yeah. That's right.
And so tell us, how is it?
It's good, I think. It's more of the same. Like, if you didn't like the previous one, this isn't going to change your mind. It's very similar. The styling is similar. The performance is similar, the engines are similar. There's not a lot of difference, but that's not a bad thing. It's always been a solid product. It's always been a good vehicle. So I think they know it works. They've sold a lot of these. I think they mentioned something like 1.4 million.
Yeah.
And globally, they told us at the launch, the X5, just the X5, not the other X models, account for 1/3 of BMW sales.
Yeah.
So, such an important model for them.
Yeah.
That you can't really blame them for not trying to reinvent the wheel here.
Yeah. It's big business for them, the premium SUV segment. Obviously, a lot of competitors. And, you wouldn't think it, because I still remember when the very first BMW X5, when they revealed the concept, two of us were still, I think, in high school. Early years in high school. I remember they made such a fuss about it, like, who's going to buy this? You know, it's not even a proper off-roader, because back then you had off-roaders and you had, you had saloon cars, basically.
And now you've got the X1, you've got the X6.
All the way through.
The most ridiculously niche SUVs, and it just makes the X5 look kind of practical in the middle of the road now.
Exactly, yeah. It makes it look sort of humble, you know, like, these days you can refer to an X5 as sort of traditional. It's still a traditional SUV.
And so it is pretty much the same vehicle that we know. It's grown a bit here and there, a bit more spacious. There are a couple of tweaks. The exterior, if you really look at it, there are quite a few changes to the nose, the bonnet, the grille, the new bumper. Some changes, but still quite subtle. I think most people out there, if they looked at this one and the previous one, they might not even notice the difference immediately.
Yeah.
But, still a very solid vehicle overall.
Yeah. Well, the thing about the X5 for me is I drove the previous generation, second generation, not that long ago, about 6 months ago. It was one of the 50Ds, one of the last models they made. And I still remember it felt quite good. It felt modern. The only place where it was lagging a bit behind was on the inside, where it didn't have BMW's Drive Select, and you could see it was aging.
Yes.
Is the interior as modern as the new BMW stuff?
They've kind of updated that now, and you are very much in line with what you'd expect from all of the latest BMWs.
Okay.
The only thing that's kind of odd to me is it does have a touchscreen, and it's nice because it's it's not a touchscreen, sorry, it's just a screen. It's not actually a touchscreen, but it's big, which is nice because if you're using the GPS, it's very visible. But it kind of just sticks out of the dashboard. And it looks as if it's supposed to recede, or sort of like those Audi flip screens, like it's supposed to flip down, but it doesn't. It just sits there.
Yeah.
And it looks a bit tacked on, like there was no way to put this.
Yeah.
And I suppose there was no way to put it because it's big. It's really big.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing I really found odd.
Yeah.
The rest of it is really well laid out. It's easy to understand. The buttons make sense. Ergonomically, I think it's done very well.
Yeah. Engines? Talk to us about engines.
Pretty much the same lineup that we know for the most part. It starts with the 30D.
Yes.
And I think that makes about 190 kilowatts or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's 560 newton meters of torque.
Sure.
So that's kind of the entry level, which isn't bad. I mean, if you think this is like the entry level diesel, that's a lot of power, 190 kilowatts, 560 newton meters of torque. And to be honest, we drove the big ones as well.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really make that much sense to buy anything other than this.
Yeah.
If you look at the M50D, for example, that's 280 kilowatts and 714 newton meters of torque.
Yeah.
And it has that M badge, but it's what they call M performance. It's not a proper M car.
Yeah.
So I don't really see the point of buying something with an M badge that still weighs way over 2 tons. It's a high riding SUV. If you want an M car, buy a car. Buy some coupe or sedan. Or I mean, there's no shortage of options when it comes to BMW. It seems a bit silly to me. There's not enough opportunity to make use of that extra kilowatt of torque.
The thing about the M performance models is we know why they built them, because they say they built them for customers who want something between a top end, just a normal run of the mill, let's say, well, X5.
Yes.
And a hardcore X5M.
Yes.
Something to slot in between there. Which, I didn't know that space existed, but, you know, it's a way of them, it's a way for them to sell M cars that aren't really M cars, you know, without people going and buying hardcore stuff.
And that's what I don't really understand about it. If you look at the M50D, well, it's got that 50D engine, which is fantastic, but there's no reason why that needs to be an M50D. That could just be a 50D that 50D, they could sell. And if you take the engine out of the equation and you just look at the dynamics and the handling and the ride, it's still so similar. If you didn't know this was an M performance package vehicle, you wouldn't know it. It still feels very similar in terms of handling. So it seems a bit pointless to me to make it an M vehicle. Rather just put that 50D in a standard X5 and make it an option, because the engine itself is...
Oh, it's magnificent.
It's wonderful with those three turbos. I mean, the fact that it's got three turbos is ridiculous, but it's so smooth. There's no turbo lag to speak of. It's just linear power. You put your foot down, and it just goes. But it's not an M vehicle. Like you say, it's dynamically, it doesn't feel that different. If you got blindfolded and put into these vehicles, you're really going to have to drive that thing to the limit to notice the difference in terms of dynamics and handling. So,
yeah,
you know, kind of what's the point? I'd say get a 30D, that's enough power. Fuel consumption on those are ridiculously good. So, I think that's all you need.
Yeah. The thing with, when it comes to premium SUVs, is, to me, the one on this list which makes the most sense is obviously the 30D. I think it's the cheapest, isn't it?
That's the thing.
Yeah, it's the cheapest, it makes the most sense. You know, it's almost as fast as the petrol.
Get that.
It uses less. Yeah, it will cost you less. But when it comes to stuff like this, it's all about bragging rights.
That's the thing.
You know, and I think that's why that M performance model
is there.
Is there. So exactly, so you can show up at a bra and go like, okay boys, keys on the table. Yeah, let's see who's got the M badge.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
But and, yeah,
and probably it's, you know, it's I think it serves as a showcase for BMW showing the world what it's capable of at the moment. And I mean, 280 kilowatts, 714 newton meters of torque. And I drove a car with this engine, previous generation X5. And on a long trip, I got the fuel consumption to go below 8 liters per 100 kilometers.
Or something amazing.
Like 7.4. And you just can't believe that with that kind of power output.
It's really impressive.
Magnificent.
If I had to opt for something like this M50D or the 5 liter petrol, I'd just go for an X6. It suits the character of the X6.
Exactly,
it's kind of a brash, slightly ostentatious, coupe, SUV, hybrid thing. And that engine suits it. Like, X5 seems like just a comfortable kind of SUV, family vehicle.
Have a 30D.
But like you say, it's all about the badge.
Okay.
And then there's a 40D coming, but it's not available yet.
Okay.
But it'll be here in March, apparently. So it's right around the corner. So we didn't get to drive that. But we know from previous generations, it's kind of very similar to the 30D, just ups power and torque a little bit, 230 kilowatts, up from 190 with the 30D, and 630 newton meters of torque, up from 560 with the 30D. So if you want a little bit more power, 40D makes sense, but realistically on a day-to-day basis, I don't think you're going to really notice those power differences. But the option's going to be there by March. Then the 35i, the petrol, that wasn't there either. That's also coming in March only. And that's 225 kilowatts of power and 400 newton meters of torque.
Okay.
I wonder how popular that is nowadays. Mm. Kind of a 35i.
Mm.
I would imagine people either go for the diesel, mm. or if they want a petrol, they want a proper V8 5-liter.
Mm.
I'd be surprised if a lot of people end up going for 35i nowadays. Yeah. But once again, the option's there.
Yeah. It just wouldn't make sense to me. I mean, obviously, the 35i would be a little bit faster, but I don't think you'd actually notice it.
And you'd lack that torque. Cause yeah. Now, all of a sudden, you've only got like 400 meters of torque
mm.
versus 560 on the 30D. I'd rather have more torque and a little less kilowatt.
Yeah. And you have to pay for the extra fuel that twin scroll turbocharged six cylinder is going to consume because it's going to be a lot.
Oh, yes.
And the xDrive 50i as well. That's a
turbocharged as well.
V8 as well.
That's huge. I mean, it's lovely. Yeah. Fuel consumption is irrelevant.
Yeah.
It's the most refined, powerful, wonderful engine that you could have. If you can afford it, go for it. You can't really justify it, but it's fun to drive.
And it still does it still make that lovely BMW V8 sound.
It's although just nowadays, nice. You don't know how much of that sound's coming through the sound system.
Oh, yeah.
Like the M50D.
Yeah.
It just sounds like a completely different. It sounds like a diesel from the outside. But when you're inside the M50D, it sounds like a V8 petrol. And that's all being pumped through the sound system.
Okay, yeah.
It's odd.
Yeah, well.
But yeah, the 50i is, it's wonderful.
Mm. Okay, so talk us through the pricing. Where does it start at?
It's pretty expensive. I mean, cheapest one you can go for, unsurprisingly, is the 35i.
Mm.
And that's going to cost you about $762,000.
Okay.
Obviously, all of these are before you start specking it, which is going to up the price.
Oh, yeah, significantly.
Yeah. But your base model, cheapest X5 you can own is the 35i at 762.
Okay.
And then next up is the xDrive 30D, and that's $777,000.
Okay.
So that's why I think it makes a lot of sense.
Mm.
Because going up, the xDrive 40D, suddenly it jumps to $881,500.
So more than $100,000.
Exactly.
In the two models, yeah.
And if you look at the power and kilowatt, power and torque difference, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think it's worth it.
And then it's another 100K up.
Mm, now it's the proper pricey, like you say, the bragging rights models.
Yeah.
They're at around 1,972,000 for the 50i and 1,026,000 for the M50D. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, that's a lot of cash for a big SUV.
Just get yourself like an xDrive 30D and spend the rest on a BRZ or an 86 something.
Exactly, yeah.
But those are the options. But that's standard. So that's exactly just a standard model that you can then spec. But then they've got something new, which is two different packages that you can opt for, which is the Excellence and the Experience.
Mm.
And those are kind of set package options that you can go for. The one looks a bit sportier than the other. And the one is a bit more, the Excellence is a bit more towards the latest styling cues of BMW.
Mm.
Whereas the Experience is a bit more sporty. It tends to have more black accents amidst the chrome.
Mm.
I prefer the look of that, but you can then choose to spec it either way.
Mm.
And it doesn't change the pricing too much. So for instance, on the 30D, where in standard guys you'd pay $777,000, now it's $792,200. So not too bad, and it's nice that it's just a set package that you can opt for, and it gives you certain things.
Yeah, and if you're already spending that much in a car, I mean, that extra $15,000 to $25,000 is not going to make much of a difference.
And then obviously you have that M Sport package options across the range, and they actually change. It's not, again, too pricey, but still, you're going to add about R50,000. And dynamically, it doesn't make a difference, really.
Yeah. If you want a dynamic driving experience, buy a 5 Series.
Mm.
You know, go for the full-fat 5 Series experience.
But we did have a 50i with the M Sport package there, and it is fun. It looks great.
Yeah.
It's fun to drive.
Mm.
So if you can afford it, I'd say go for it. It's very cool. But
yeah,
I think the 30D, that's the one that makes the most sense.
So tell me, did the X5 could it handle Mozambique? Because the last time I went there in the soft rider, we had some punctured wheels and, you know, a few sad faces. You have to think very carefully if you want to introduce your SUV in a place like that. So, did it cope?
Well, we only went 20 kilometers into Mozambique.
Okay. And okay. Did it cope with those 20 kilometers?
And this was sand road, so it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Very sandy road. The second day it rained, so it firmed it up quite a bit. So then it was easy to drive. But first day it was quite loose and quite fun. And it handled it no problem. Especially it's got the traction control setting that you can switch it off. That can sometimes cause trouble in sand. But yeah, it did very well. And then on the SA side, because we flew into Richards Bay and drove from there, we probably did about 100, more than 100 kilometers on very ugly gravel roads. Very rocky. And it did surprisingly well. I was impressed. I mean, we did a trip to Namibia a couple of years ago with compact SUVs, and the X1 was part of the lineup. And on that trip, we lost 5 tires. So it shows you, those run flats, they don't cope with the gravel roads, especially in Namibia. It's terrible. Like, it's really, really, really bad gravel roads. So it is a worry, especially with these performance vehicles. You know, the rims are like over 20 inches. It's low profile.
Yeah.
You can't really deflate your tires much. The sidewalls are in danger. It's just not ideal, but that's the problem, because especially when you look at something like the xDrive 50i or the M50D, those things can go way over 200 kilometers an hour. So you can imagine it weighs 2.5 tons. It goes over 200 kilometers an hour. The braking power needed. So you've got big calipers, and those limit the size of the wheel. So it's not like you can fit 17-inch rims on these things. So it is a bit of a problem, and it is a bit of a sacrifice. With all these luxury SUVs, it's the same for Range Rover. It's the same for Mercedes-Benz with the ML and the GL. They're geared more towards on-road driving because of the big wheels and the big brakes. It's always a problem, especially with the Disco 4, where it's still like quite a hardcore overland vehicle. But I suppose not enough people really take it off-road.
Yeah, I mean, like, let's be honest, the most the X5 will ever see off-road is the occasional dirt road leading to a cabin in the woods somewhere.
And it'll handle that.
Easy.
And it is surprisingly capable. I mean, it does have a really good 4x4 system, and it does have all the tricks that you need. So, if you're willing to take your expensive 1 million rand X5 into middle of nowhere, I'm sure it'll get surprisingly far.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't think a lot of people are going to do it.
So, when you came back from this trip, you immediately left and for Lesotho.
That's right.
And you had a new Kuga.
That's right.
To drive with. Tell me a bit about that.
Well, I wasn't looking forward to it a lot.
Because
I'd never driven the new one. I did like 10Ks in it. It was here at the office, and I drove it once to the shops and back or something. But I love the previous one. The 2.5 ST engine. Yeah. I love that gearbox. I love the look of it.
Yeah, that 5-cylinder noise.
And it just annoyed me that they launched that. And a couple of months later, this one comes along.
Yeah.
And this one, if you look at it, it just looks more mundane. You can see it's more in line with what everyone's doing.
Yeah.
It's more like the CRV and the RX35. It's not something different. Like, the previous one was really unique, especially with that 2.5 engine. And I wasn't looking forward to it, but I was actually really impressed. Like, it's a very, very good little compact SUV. And if we're honest, it makes a hell of a lot more sense than the previous one. As fun as that 2.5 is, it was so thirsty.
Yeah.
And this one is more spacious.
Yeah.
It's got tons of entertainment and comfort and safety things. I mean, it's really in line with kind of what BMW and Audi are doing. Like, you look at the technology in the Kuga, and it's amazing to think that's a Ford. It parks itself. You just have to swipe your foot under the tailgate, and it opens automatically. It's got cameras and sensors, and really impressive vehicle. And the engine as well. We drove the 2-liter diesel. And it's surprisingly fun to drive. It feels so zippy. It's got 120 kilowatts and 340 newton meters of torque, which is about what the Hilux has. And this isn't a very small little body compared to that. And it feels great. It's punchy and agile. You can corner it nicely as well. It's a very cool vehicle.
It's what strikes me about this new Kuga compared to the old one is the new Kuga is definitely uglier than the old one. I mean, like, if you check it straight on front, I mean, it's got that gaping face. Like, it's
that's just, the thing. It's just, I don't find it nearly as good looking as the previous one. That one looked so sporty and so cool. This one, it just, it's more in line with what everyone else is doing.
The big difference between the old one and the new one, though, is price. Because the old one was expensive. That was an expensive
And that's because SUV, we only had that one engine.
Yeah, exactly, and it came in top spec. Now, there's a wide range of engines available. You've got a 1.6 EcoBoost.
That's right.
With you can have an 110 kilowatts or 132 kilowatts.
So one's turbocharged and the other isn't, right?
No, they're both.
Oh, they're both turbocharged. Yeah,
it's just different states of tune or something like that.
I was actually hoping we were going to test that one.
Yeah, me too.
I was looking forward to seeing what that EcoBoost engine does.
I was on the launch of the Kuga, and we didn't get to spend that much time in the cars, but that really impressed me because it feels like it's got more power than it actually has.
It really does. I was amazed with the diesel that we drove. It really feels quite sporty, so I was keen to see what the petrol would be like.
And then the amount of standard kit on the inside, especially Ford's sync system.
That's really good.
I love Ford's sync system because that's one of the systems where you interact with the car and it actually works.
Yes.
Because Ford, they told us on the launch, they actually came to South Africa and they worked with all the various accents we get here.
Oh, really?
So it actually understands an Afrikaans.
Pretty much everybody.
Yeah, an Afrikaans oak like myself speaking English or trying to speak English.
Oh, that's cool.
It actually understands me and I like that.
And it's effective.
Oh, it's
super effective.
You can
really play around with that.
Yeah. No, you can actually, I mean, you can even use Afrikaans titles. You know, you can put some Afrikaans songs or whatever. Tell it, you know, pick up this from Brachus Nell or, you know, whoever else. And it actually picks up Afrikaans.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That's
and
cool.
The pricing, like you say, isn't bad. The one we drove is top spec. Titanium, all-wheel drive. And that's 425,000.
Yeah. And what do they start at? Somewhere, I think it's about 280, isn't it, for a base model? That's not bad.
No, it's not bad at all. I mean, it's really good value for money. But that 425,000 Rand model we tested, it's got everything. It really is very, very close to what you'd get in an Audi or BMW. I don't think the finish is inside. It doesn't have quite that feeling of luxury and quality yet. But you're getting the same specifications, really, at a very good price. So I was impressed with it. We went to Lesotho, so I was a bit worried about those low-profile tires. But those did well. The vehicle did well. Fuel consumption was a little bit high, probably around between somewhere between 8 and 9 liters per 100 kilometers. But that was because it's in Lesotho, and some of those inclines are so hectic. You know that real-time readout that shows you fuel consumption? On those steep inclines, it can be 25, 30 liters per 100 kilometers. So you've got to be kind of fair on it and think that's not the easiest environment.
Yeah.
So overall, it did really well. And everything just works. There's no real hassle with the vehicle. The only thing is the tailgate. You have to get used to swiping your foot. Otherwise, you kind of stand around like an idiot.
Yeah.
Kicking at the bottom of a car and nothing's happening.
And I can just imagine people walking by you with in the mall parking lot going like, is that overdoing?
But yeah, very nice vehicle. And it did well. And in the city, they're busy tarring the road from Maseru to Ramabanta and through there to Semankong, which was always a really ugly dirt road. Like, it wasn't a pleasant road, especially on low-profile tires. And now they're tarring it. There's still quite a bit left. I mean, they started this 2 years ago when I was there, and they'd done a little section. Now they're much further, but still, they're supposed to be done by the 1st of October. I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But there are sections that are lovely, like some of the nicest driving roads in all of Southern Africa. On par with like Franschhoek Pass and that sort of thing.
Okay.
So, fantastic place to take a vehicle and just drive some mountain passes. But it's odd as well because it's still a rural area. You've got this perfect tarred road where you can have some proper speed. But then you come around the corner and there's a guy with his flock of sheep.
Yeah.
And you're talking like 80 sheep.
Yeah.
Right on the road.
Yeah.
Or a bunch of donkeys. So you've got to be careful. Yeah. It's kind of a dangerous environment now because you've got this road that allows for so much speed. But there's still people and animals in the road all the time. So it's odd, but yeah, the Cougar liked it.
Yeah, no, he did like
very well.
One medium-sized SUV and 80 sheep, that makes for a big accident, like probably big accident. The other car we want to talk about, we both drove this one, is Citroen's Aircross.
That's it.
The new entry-level diesel model, which is weird because it doesn't feel like a entry-level.
Not at all.
Or a diesel for that matter.
Not at all. It's really, really good. For the price, I was astonished.
Mm.
Like, you know, I wasn't actually sure that I was in a diesel.
Yeah.
Because you can hear the diesel clatter outside, but the insulation in the cabin is so good.
Mm.
You turn that key, and it's silent. It's like a petrol engine. And it's also refined. It's so easy to drive. You just drive it like you would a petrol engine. I was quite amazed. The interior quality as well. I mean, you can see there's a lot of ASX in there. You can see it's based on the ASX. And if you look at the two consoles, you can see all the similarities. Even when you switch it on, it's got that light blinking ASNG for the stop-go system, which is a Mitsubishi thing. So that's really a Mitsubishi under there.
Yeah.
Apart from the engine, you can get it in the 2-liter petrol, which it shares with the ASX. But this diesel engine is fantastic. It's the one to buy.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. That's the best one. With that manual gearbox, it's lovely.
Mm. And it's what I like most about that car is the size, because it is actually a compact SUV.
Mm.
It's we had it standing outside here for a while, and you know, when it stood next to the Isuzu long-term we have, you could actually see how small it is in comparison. Tiny. It is a tiny car, and it's so easy to live with on a day-to-day basis. I mean, finding a parking space. It's beautiful as well. It is.
They really did a good job. It just stands out.
Yeah, I think out of all the cars based on that design, and there are a few, it's probably not the best looking. I think the Subaru XV is, in my opinion, the best looking one. Mm. But I mean, it's also quite cool.
Yes.
Like, that Citroen did something with
it. Yes, no, it's very nice. And the interior as well. Like you say, it doesn't feel entry-level.
Mm.
It's fairly basic, but it seems plush, and build quality seems high. It doesn't seem like some cheap little entry-level vehicle.
Yeah. It's like they put a lot of effort into, you know, putting the right materials in the right place, because everywhere you touch, it's got a nice feeling to it.
You know, it does.
The leather and the steering wheel, it all feels nice. It's an awesome little car.
Saying that, I love the steering wheel on the Ford Kuga as well.
Mm.
It's got such a nice feel to it that it just kind of encourages you to drive it.
Mm.
And it's very direct as well and responsive. It really just, you point it somewhere and the vehicle goes there.
Mm.
I was really impressed with how the steering felt.
Mm.
And it has a kind of a progressive quality to it as well. It's quite soft when you're just driving slowly. You know, it's easy to make it a U-turn or something like that.
Mm.
And then just firms up so nicely when you're driving quickly.
Mm. Now, Ford has a long history of making cars that steer so well.
Mm.
Like, I had a car which was an awesome little go-kart of a thing, and my mom had a Focus, and I remember driving that and thinking, like, yes, this is just a normal hatch.
Mm.
You know, it shouldn't steer this well. It's like such a lacquer car to drive.
It's true.
And same in this one as well.
Only thing I don't like is if you want to switch the automatic gearbox to manual. It's just got those buttons for up and up.
Oh, yeah. Power shift, they call it.
And it doesn't have a natural feel to it.
Yeah.
The pedals are nice. When you're getting into the driving and you're steering it through corners, the pedals are cool.
Mm.
And also, if the shifter actually has kind of a manual function where you push it up or down or something like that. But this doesn't have a natural feel to it. It feels like, I don't know, it feels odd to just be pushing a button up and down.
Yeah, no, it's definitely weird, because everybody else is doing it the same way.
Mm.
Like, sort of, you get your shifter down, your which you push up and down, or the pedals behind the wheels. And, you know, somebody at Ford must have just gone like, well, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
Let's do our own little thing. And it doesn't quite work, that thumbing it thing.
And it's actually strange, because if the Kuga wasn't fun to drive, you wouldn't really even consider it. But it's because it's so much fun to drive, and the steering's so good, it's so much fun that you're looking for that extra bit where you can actually manage the gears properly. Most of the time, you're not even going to bother putting a compact SUV in manual mode. But this one I found so much fun, especially on those roads, that I wanted to put it in manual mode, but that just didn't feel natural to me. I couldn't get into it.
That is weird. I suppose if you actually bought a Kuga, you'd get used to it after a while.
Mm.
But Yeah, for us, it just doesn't work. Last car? Shall we do the last one?
Yes.
It was just delivered today, so the only thing we can comment on is the styling, but it's one of the big SUV launches of the year, and it's the new Prado.
Yes.
Just rocked up at the office a few hours ago. I'm
looking forward to testing it.
Yeah, me too.
And we can kind of, we know what to expect, because it's still the same old engines.
Yeah.
The one we've got is the 4-liter petrol V6. And I love that engine. I love it in every one of the Toyota 4x4s and SUVs. Because the 120 kilowatt diesel, it doesn't suit that kind of car, I think. It's fine in the Hilux. It's even fine in the Fortuner.
Because
it's kind of a Bucky-based SUV. But this is a plush, expensive vehicle. And to share like a D4D engine with a Hilux just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
But this 4-liter petrol, okay, it's going to be ridiculously thirsty with that heavy body. But it's a pleasant drive.
And it's going to be good off-road, I think.
I think
Toyota has a history of building magnificent off-road vehicles. The one thing we do need to talk about is the styling. Because this is the first time we've seen one up close now.
Yes.
Standing outside its silver. And there's a lot of badge going on there. There's a lot of bling going on there.
Like, but I must admit, I like it.
Yeah.
I like the grille. I like the big grille.
Yeah.
And I like the dimensions of it. Ever since this generation came out, there's been rumblings. People haven't been in love with this design. And it's probably not the nicest Prado that's ever been released. But still, I like it. I can totally live with that styling.
What I like about the styling is it seems Toyota is proud of this car.
Yes.
Like, you know, like previous generation Prados were always styled to sort of blend in. You know, they weren't offensive, they weren't like if you can liken them to a person, you know, the old Prados would come through the door and they'd be like, "Hello, I'm the Prado," you know, sorry for being sort of thing. But the new one just shouts, it's like, "Prado, and I'm here, and look at my badge and look at my grill," and I love that.
And like you say, a lot of like Land Cruiser little badges and things. Even in the light housing there's little Land Cruiser names and things like that. But it's cool. I like the styling.
Yeah.
And like you say, it's going to be good off-road as well. It's got all the tools for it.
Yeah. I mean, this, of course, is, I think, the first Prado to come with all of those fancy Land Rover-like electronics and stuff.
There's a lot of it.
Like, yeah.
I was sitting in there and trying to get it ready for rock crawling, and there's quite a few options. Like, you can turn the dial or you can do it manually. But I got caught out because I started doing it manually. I put it in low range. And then I raised it and fiddled with a couple of settings. And then when I wanted to go back to the dial, it said, no, you can't because you're already in this. You have to disable this before you go back to, like, the idiot-proof version.
Yeah.
It's quite complicated. There's so many buttons. It's difficult to know what works with what. But once you figure it out, I mean, it's got absolutely everything you can need. It's obviously got low range. But what's cool is it's also got a center diff that you can lock. So... you can lock the center diff, and then you can lock the rear diff. Yeah, pretty much everything you need for 4x4ing. With that engine, I think it'll be very good. Only thing that counts against it is the size. It's a really big vehicle. On a tight 4x4 trail, it's intimidating. But it was quite impressive when I put it in low range just here in the parking area. The cameras actually come on. To show you the size of the vehicle.
Okay.
So that's quite cool. I was quite impressed by that.
That's helpful.
Yeah. I don't know if it was supposed to go on or if I pressed something, but when I was in low range, suddenly the size of the vehicle was on the screen. And that's very cool. That's useful because then you know, am I safe? Am I going to hit something?
If you want to go off-roading by yourself and you don't necessarily have a partner showing you
what to do.
So
I was quite impressed by that.
Cool. Well, I think we've covered everything.
I think that's it.
Yeah, that's all the cars we drove this week. Tune back in next time when we've actually driven the Prado off-road.
That's going to be interesting. We'll talk
about that,
It's going to be fun to discuss that.
Yeah, well, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week.
Chat soon. Cheers.